I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Kirsten Stewart's first book, Our Turn, is not only a memoir of her time working up from a Girl Friday job at a film distribution company right out of university to becoming the head of programming at Hallmark, then Alliance Atlantis and its group of cable channels, to her tenure at the CBC, culminating in her appointment as executive vice president of English services, overseeing radio, television, and digital. She left the CBC in 2013 to become managing director for Twitter Canada. She now oversees Twitter's North American media partnerships. In the book, she talks about her experiences and the qualities of leadership that women have that will dramatically change workplaces and outdated business models. The book offers ideas and strategies on how to change the conversation in business, but also in the culture. It's an engaging book. The Twitter handle is at Kirsten Stewart. The book is published by Random House. She joined me from Vancouver last week. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Kirsten Stewart. Ms. Stewart, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So this book, Our Turn, speaks to the desire that a lot of people have, I think, in terms of the new kinds of leadership that we need. Would you, if you had to describe the sort of qualities that an ideal leader ought to have, you have a sense of that, don't you, from your experience?
Sure. Well, I think what we're seeing today is a shift in business where, you know, at one point, you know, you could be a monolithic business without a lot of interaction with either your employees or with your world around you and kind of make decisions and do that from a corner office. Whereas today, there's fundamental shifts that are happening. You have technology that's putting power into the hands of the people. They have a chance to say something. They have their own form of influence on your business, within your business. You have millennials that are coming in as a generation of workers and Generation Z behind them who have a certain expectation of how their work-life contract is going to work and what they expect out of their daily job. And I think, you know, all of these things combined mean that businesses have to define success differently than they did in the past. They know that they can't do things the way they did before, so leadership has to look different than it did. And that means potentially there's an opportunity here, which I believe it is, our turn. So those of us who didn't feel like we were represented in leadership in the past now have a chance to take charge in whatever seat we're sitting in.
So when you say it's our time, are you talking primarily about women? At the same time, I found the book terribly engaging. So I guess men should be considering new ideas.
Yes, our is definitely an all-inclusive hour. Our is about people who maybe feel like they have been left out in terms of the definition of what a leader looks like and how a leader is supposed to behave. You know, people who have those attributes and are not necessarily only prescribed to women. I think that I write from a female perspective because I'm a woman, that's who I am, that's all I know. But definitely when you see new forms of leadership today, whether they take form in a boss that has a funny-looking beard or one who wears a hoodie, you know, you're just seeing a different kind. Leadership doesn't look like it used to before, and that's for both men and women.
You talk in the book about working your way up, and of course it wasn't always easy. The importance of mentors. You talk about, how do you pronounce her name, Ismay Benny?
Ismay, yeah.
Ismay Benny.
Yeah. She was my first boss in my job, and, you know, as a woman who kind of had gone before me, so being even a generation before, had faced a whole other set of challenges in terms of establishing herself in what was a very male-driven media and television kind of landscape. And I think, you know, working with her and seeing the kind of choices that she made both in business and in life was a real eye-opener, both in a way that I could see, you know, how I might want to live my life, but also the kind of sacrifices that she had to give up that I determined I wouldn't want to in order to achieve the kinds of things she did. And with times changing, you know, there was a real opportunity to not have to make the same kind of sacrifices she did, which was good for me. So then hopefully you think that the generation after myself, so I'm a Gen Xer, so looking at the millennials, they're also similarly going to have a way cleared for them that it hadn't been in the past.
So it's important for you now to be a mentor like she was to you?
Yes, I think the difference is that, you know, Ismay was at an age, and I was at an age that was so, you know, Ismay was a person in her 40s where I was someone just coming into the workforce in my 20s. We worked together for a very long time. We worked for 7 years together, and that's not necessarily what mentorship looks like now because people people can be working for someone who is younger than them.
Mm-hmm.
People can not be working at a place for too long. They work maybe for 1, 2, 3 years before they make that shift. So I think mentorship looks a bit different than that kind of apprentice kind of setup that I may have had with ISME. I think mentorship today is learning from people in all parts of your life.
Now, the scrutiny that women undergo, whether leaders or not, I mean, now as before, I mean, it's awfully different than that a man gets. Can that change, do you think?
I think it can. I think, again, we have if we can push to a more acceptance of understanding who we are as individuals instead of kind of putting people into a box as to how they should fit in terms of description of look or behavior. I think that's, you know, understanding that genius and good ideas and perspective and things that are valuable to a business come from all kinds of areas and all kinds of people in different shapes, colors, and sizes, that it's more representing, you know, who we are is important, and we don't have to be so homogenistic about how we look. We can actually represent a whole spectrum of things.
What I learned as a guy reading the book was that the language that we use means a great deal, and
mm-hmm.
and that needs to change, the conversation, if you will.
Yes, yeah, I think it's important to remember that what we say and how we act, you know, has a huge influence, and the language that we use and how our own narrative can be changed by how other people. I think sometimes we feel like we are our own worst enemy when we internalize sometimes what we believe people to think about us, and we kind of modify or change the way that we behave or kind of limit ourselves based on how we're afraid people are going to react to something. I think sometimes we have to just give each other the grace to understand that people do make mistakes. People are different than each other. It is good to have a healthy debate. It is good to have a diversity of perspectives. And instead of putting people in a box because they don't necessarily agree with you or look like you, I think that's important now to understand that we're representing everybody at the table.
And we need to realize, whether we're men or women, that other people's expectations shouldn't be foisted upon us, that we shouldn't think.
Yes, and not to internalize those, too.
Yeah. Did you find that leaders listen enough?
Good ones do. That's what I think. That's how things are changing. I think we now are seeing a world in which people have all kinds of avenues for communication and expression, and that means everyone from, you know, the person working in the stockroom to your client to, you know, anybody who touches your business now has a voice through social media, through technology. I think it's only to our benefit to listen as leaders and take that information, because what someone volunteers in that conversation is incredibly useful data that teaches us a little bit something about that person, but what they need, what they want, how we can satisfy that, and how we can be better in business.
And I guess people do want to contribute, whether they're at the bottom of the ladder, if you will.
I think the benefit of taking, again, the pressure off yourself, realizing that you don't have to be CEO, you don't have to be president to check that box off of success. Success is what you build it to be. Success is where you feel that your skills are being fully used, where you are satisfied and connected with your job, and feel passionate about the people that you're working with and what you're contributing to. You know, that is true success, and you can lead and make decisions now at so many levels where in the past, you know, that kind of authority was concentrated in one office. It's now having to be divested through a company in order to get everything done we possibly need to get done as a business today.
Now, some people will read this book looking for insight as to your experience at the CBC, your years there. When you left the CBC, of course, that was big news in this country. Was there a different culture when you ended up at Twitter from the CBC in terms of, say, being a workplace more conducive to women, maybe?
I think this is a completely different culture altogether. You know, you're talking about a business, you know, the CBC was 75 years old and had over 5,000 people working at it from coast to coast to coast. Twitter is an international company with less than 4,000 people. When I joined, less than 3,000, and, you know, worldwide, and just having a different approach to what communication and what platforms can look like. And it was only at that time 7 years old. So, you know, there is a really stark difference in how businesses behave, or at least these two businesses behaved, based on the history or lack of history that they had and the kind of willingness to try something different because they didn't really know what rules existed. And that's Twitter.
So legacy media companies, if you will, like the CBC, corporations like that, they can learn from, say, technology companies?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, I think what they can learn is the same lessons that technology companies are learning. So I think what, you know, the shift and the dynamics of what is happening in business today and what makes a successful business is true whether you're a technology company or whether you're a media company or whether you're a bank. The opportunities that we have to lead at different levels and in different ways is not necessarily just something that a new tech business can do. I think technology has changed the way every business works. And that kind of effect means, you know, again, the definitions of a success are changed for all those businesses as well. So I think we're now looking at a place where success is now more embodied in this new style of leadership that I talk about in Our Turn, and it is applicable businesses wide.
And so if some place like the CBC adapts these new attitudes, do you think its survival is better suited than it would be otherwise?
I think these are all lessons for everybody. I think mm-hmm. the opportunity to drive decision-making down throughout a business, to not concentrate power in a few areas, to make sure that communication is a skill that's encouraged. You know, these are all things that benefit every business, I think. Now, older businesses have a little more difficulty in adapting because they have habits, and those habits are hard to break. But I think, you know, it's at their peril that they don't learn to behave in new ways, because you do have waves of new people coming into the business in the form of millennials and Generation Z who expect that this is the way their business runs and their workplace runs. So I think it would not be a good idea to ignore that.
Now, one of the reasons you left the CBC, and you write this in the book, was because of these huge budget cuts that the corporation was facing, that your job was more managing a balance sheet rather than being a creative leader. With the change in the new government, do you think that'll change the future of the CBC, say?
Here's hoping. I think, you know, when you look at the worldwide, public broadcasters and broadcasting in general is under huge pressure, but public broadcasters, the BBC, for example, you know, public broadcasters around the world are facing increased challenges to their relevancy when, you know, so much technology and different platforms and different avenues to be able to create and distribute and hear content. I think the one thing that you know, something like the CBC stands for and the BBC stand for, which is a quality news service, which nobody else can deliver, because that's, you know, an incredibly expensive endeavor, and it's one that has to be done, you know, quite independently and not influenced by business and other reasons. That's a good reason to still be around. But I think, you know, again, media has to find its way into where it's going to settle out.
Women and how much they're being paid compared to men, I mean, that's something that a lot of people are talking about in recent years. In your experience, how do we address pay disparity?
I think, again, it's a matter of knowing what you're worth. And I think myself, sometimes as a woman, you're so happy to get the job and so a little bit grateful that you maybe decide it's not the time to rock the boat and ask for something more. So in that gratitude, I think we sell ourselves a bit short, and it's just a reminder that if they've given you the job, if you've earned it, therefore they're expecting, you know, you to have certain things you need satisfied, and that includes a certain pay raise or pay level. So don't be afraid in that moment. You're chosen. You're not going to lose the job by asking for it, so just ask. And I mm-hmm. think that's what we need to remind ourselves sometimes.
The other thing that I found interesting in the book is you talk about 5-year plans and that they didn't really work in your life.
No, not for me. And I don't know who they do work for, because I think the world today is just changing too fast to be able to depend on something that's actually, you know, too structured. But at the same time, I think you need to know yourself. You need to know what your values are. You need to know what makes you happy. You need to know what your skill set is, where you can contribute and where you can feel like you can have good influence and actually be a part of a bigger team. Those things, if you keep satisfying those values, then I think that's part of your core being, and then the plan kind of lays itself out.
So how do you view the future? I mean, because it is so unknowable. I mean, there are goals, though, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think we have this really unique time right now where all of these pieces are kind of coming together to provide this shift that we need to take advantage of as people who represent this different form of leadership. But if we don't make the move, I do think that the window could close quite quickly. There's so much pressure to do things the way things have always been done. Old habits die hard. People understand business models in a way that they always did. It's just easier for them. So to suggest that the shift can happen on its own, I think that's a bit dangerous. We really do need to keep pushing at this level, flexing that muscle, and making sure that we help businesses transition and transform into the new way of doing business.
A lot of guys are reading this book nowadays, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they're getting
great feedback.
yeah, and there is a lot to get out of it, isn't there, even if you are a guy?
Yeah, I think, like I said, the book may feel, it looks like a woman's book. There's a woman on the cover, that's me.
Yeah.
But that's, again, all I know, that's all I am, that's all I know how to write from. But I think the lessons of leadership are about individuality and stressing the kind of qualities of an individual now and what makes sense to contribute best to business, whether, like I said, you're at the top or whether you're leading from where you are. I think that's genderless. That's an opportunity for everybody who just hasn't seen themselves as represented in leadership in the past.
Now, you write in the book about once you became in charge at the CBC about the changing sort of the culture there. One example you give is how Hockey Night in Canada was managed. That when you got there, it was pretty much white guys. So you change things around by diversifying the people around there. And some people might think, well, you're seeking a quota, but not necessarily, right?
No, I think in media particularly, and something like a brand like Hockey Night in Canada, which is to appeal to families across the country, you have to remember that you can only relate to your audience if you have a real close connection to your audience. The best connection you can have is people who represent that audience. And so to have a diversity of background, of experience, of Canadian, not Canadian, I think, sometimes it's important for us to remember who we're trying to represent, particularly as a public broadcaster. You should be looking like the audience that you're trying to speak to so that you can better relate to them and understand their unique challenges and their unique opportunities for engagement. So it really, I think people understand now, makes better business sense to do this. If you can't justify it internally on a this is a good human being thing to do, then at the very least you can say this is a good business practice, because I think you do understand an audience and can speak to them better if you look and sound and understand, feel that audience.
Now, your two daughters, they're growing up in a different world than you did. When they're in the workplace, when say they're your age.
Yeah, already one's in university.
So. Yeah. So do you think it'll be a better place? Are you hopeful?
Yes, I am. I am hopeful. And I think I see younger women, either their age or a little bit older, and what they kind of expect out of their careers. You know that they're going to face challenges. It's not going to be easy. It's not easy for anybody, but I do think that the more they feel emboldened to ask and to check in and to check into themselves, and to make sure that, their work-life combination is one that makes sense for them, I think their confidence that they have is incredibly impressive.
Kirsten, this is a great book. Congratulations on it. It's a terribly useful one. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you.
The book is called Our Turn. It's published by Random House. Its author, Kirsten Stewart, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunter.